Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. The big political story and the big personal story have something in common today. The House of Representatives is expected to defeat that bill to raise the debt ceiling we were just talking about. And the new report on home sales out this morning shows more Americans who can afford mortgage debt are deciding not to buy. So let's open the phones now for any of you who are making a decision at this time to be a renter by choice. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. The Times this morning had an article about this in advance of the new housing slump numbers just out, which we'll go over. It quotes Jeffrey Friedman, chief executive of Associated Estates, saying, "We have more of what we call renters by choice than I've seen in the 40 years I've been in the apartment business." It then goes on to quote somebody as an example of this. One Susan Lindsay, a San Diego software programmer, says she was once eagerly waiting for the housing market to crash. She said she would have no guilt about swooping in on some foreclosed owner who had bought a place he could not afford. With prices now down by a third, however, she is content to stay in her $2,500 a month rented house. She prefers to invest in gold. That's the ultimate pessimist investment, right? Which she has been buying since 2003. Said Ms. Lindsay, 48, as she headed off for a holiday weekend in Las Vegas, "I could afford a median price house, but I would be paying more to live in a place I like less." So does that sound like any of you right now, renters by choice? In light of the numbers that just came out this morning, can we get some voices on the air from some of you who are renters by choice? And why am I asking? Just to help other people in your position make some decisions. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Also to help out with this is New York Times economics columnist David Leonhardt. He helped put together a Times own or rent calculator to help you figure out which is more advantageous in your specific situation. We have a link to that on our page right now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And David Leonhardt, hello. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning.
And first, can I get your take on these numbers? Have you looked at them yet? Home prices in major areas have reached their lowest level since the housing bubble burst in 2006, driven down by foreclosures, a glut of unsold homes, and the reluctance or inability of many to buy. But my goodness, here we are 5 years later. We thought we were in a phase of the beginning of a recovery of the economy in various ways, but now we're being told that home prices in major areas have reached their lowest level yet. What do you make of it?
Yeah, they have fallen again. In some ways, it's a triple dip. If you look at this graph of the Case-Shiller Index, which are the numbers we're all talking about this morning, you see this enormous run-up, and then you see this sharp fall. They're almost mirror images of each other until early 2009. And then the graph looks like the letter M. It goes up, down again. We have a bunch of different things going on. The stimulus bill had some incentives for people to buy homes, which kept the decline from being too bad, which was part of the point. But then they end, and the decline resumes again. We've got waves of foreclosed homes still coming on the market. We've got psychology going on in which people used to think that home buying was a can't-miss investment, and now they think it's a can't-make investment, at least some of them do. And so, yeah, nationwide, in inflation-adjusted terms, we're back to where prices were, I think, in about 2000, the year 2000. Which is just a reminder that any price, including home prices, can go down.
In case we think New York is immune, because sometimes we hear New York is immune, and this is really about places that went bubble crazy like Las Vegas and Miami, according to the AP write-up on these Case-Shiller numbers this morning, it says the 12 cities now at their lowest levels in nearly 4 years are Atlanta, Charlotte, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Las Vegas, Miami, Minneapolis, New York, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, and Tampa. Those are in alphabetical order. And yet in New York, I think we do see stability or slightly rising prices in Manhattan, even over the last year. according to other reports that have come out. I know somebody in a nice neighborhood in Queens who just had an open house and put a home on the market. They've had nothing but a parade of people at least looking over 1 week. So is it just really block to block, neighbor to neighborhood by neighborhood in the New York area?
It is, although if I were an owner or a potential buyer in New York, I would be nervous about the echoes of the bubble rationales that you can now hear in New York. These basically explanations for why the normal rules don't apply to New York, that foreigners want to buy property there, which is something you also heard about Miami, and needless to say, that didn't save Miami. Prices will never fall in a center city, which is just false on its face, right? I mean, a price can always get too high. New York has some distinct advantages. It is home to Wall Street, which, whether you like it or not, is still doing really quite well. It not just even beyond Wall Street, it's home to a lot of very affluent people. And even when owning isn't completely rational economically, if you have enough money, you want to own anyway because it comes with some non-economic benefits. And then C, New York, because of the co-ops, much as we may have all had bad experiences with co-op boards, co-ops were some of the most sane places during the bubble. They continued to insist on down payments. And so those are reasons why New York is somewhat different than the rest of the country. Having said that, in parts of New York, including Manhattan, prices are really hard to justify right now relative to rents. If you're out there looking, you can save yourself a lot of money by renting. And when you see that, it really is the sign of something that looks a little strange. And so it would not surprise me if in the next few years prices fell in Manhattan. It also wouldn't surprise me if they did essentially nothing for many years, which would be, in inflation-adjusted terms, a price decline.
David Leonhardt, New York Times economics columnist. As we talk about the new housing price numbers out today, and let's talk to some of these renters by choice. And listeners, we're going to try to help you figure out if you're in the market to move, whether you should be in the market to buy or rent. We've put David's rent or own calculator on our webpage, a link to it on the Times site. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show, and we'll look at this in just a minute. But let's hear from some of our renters by choice calling in. Rob in Mamaroneck. Hi, Rob. Thanks for calling. Rob, are you there? All right, let's try to get back to Rob. I think we have Ariel in Newark. Ariel, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
Hi. So you're choosing to rent?
Yeah, so my wife and I recently got married a couple of months ago, and 2 years ago we decided that before we got married, it'd be best if we could pay off all of our debts before getting married. And in doing so, you know, we decided to, we did that, and now we do have enough money to buy a house, but we find it easier to rent because it gives us some flexibility. She wants to start up her own business now, and if something were to not go as well, then it's easier to get up and move than to get out of a commitment for a house. So we're trying to live as much as we can within our means that we started a while ago, and it just makes it a lot easier.
I hear you. Thanks a lot, and good luck to both of you.
All right, thank you.
And Ashley in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ashley. You rent by choice?
Yeah, my husband and I do rent by choice. We live in Brooklyn, and we have a young daughter. And both of us are employed, but we're also both in graduate school to sort of further our employment in the future. So we're paying tuition as well as rent, and a mortgage isn't something that we feel like we can take on right now. And as far as ownership goes, it's not something that that's not a prize for us for the time being. We're very content. Like the previous caller said, the flexibility of renting we find to be very helpful because we also do have a child and we may need to move.
That's definitely one of the things that keeps coming up is that it's just easier to move if you're
exactly
a renter. Now,
and we've owned before. We owned when we lived
you
in Chicago.
Did. Really?
So we... So
you've gone from from owning to renting. By the way, since you're both in graduate school, you may want to hear our related segment at the top of next hour in which we will ask, is college tuition the new bubble? considering what people get for that investment in the job market as tuition prices continue to rise. And we'll ask our guest on that later, Anya Kamenetz, whether that goes for graduate school as well as undergrad.
That's true. We've made a commitment to paying for graduate school for ourselves and in 15 years for our daughter.
Good luck. Ashley, thank you for your call. All right. Another renter by choice, I believe. Artie in Forest Hills. You're on WNYC. Hi, Artie.
Hi. We sold our house. We're older people. We sold our house a few years ago as the market was declining. We wanted to buy another place, but we had to move quickly. Long story short, we wound up renting the apartment we really wanted to own, and now I would never buy it because, for one thing, the price of it is so high, even still now, relative to what I would want to pay, that we would be using up almost all the money we spent, you know, that we got from owning a house to buy one. Wouldn't have the kind of cash we like as older folks to be able to buy presents, to give gifts, to go on small trips, to visit our relatives. And tax-wise, it's not really an advantage. We're in such a low tax bracket that, in fact, the standard deduction would more than eat up the interest payment, so we would get no benefit financially. For lots of kinds of people, I think even people our age, it's a win-win to sell your house and rent if you're in a low tax bracket.
That's fascinating. Artie, thank you. In fact, Artie, stay on the line there for a minute, because, David, this is a very interesting case, right? He didn't take a home equity loan. He sold the house and, you know, takes the cash and finds that he's better off paying out of pocket when the house may have already been, you know, completely owned, but paying into a rental and having more money to live on. Is that unusual?
I don't know how unusual it is, but I think it's smart. I think one of the worst things that has happened with real estate is this notion, this commonly held notion, that renting is wasting money and owning is an investment. That's just not true. It depends. It is true that money you spend on rent is money that you can't get back. But money you spend on your broker's fee is money you can't get back. Money you spend repairing a leaky roof is money you can't get back. Money you spend on property taxes is money that you can't get back. And so when you add it all up, it's often the case that, in fact, renting leaves you with more money and owning leaves you with less money. And actually, you mentioned education here. It's your next segment. Actually, I think there's an important comparison here. A lot of people like to badmouth education right now. It's interesting. People who often do have college degrees themselves and wouldn't trade it. But the fact is that the ratio of the pay of college graduates to non-college graduates is higher than it's ever been. College graduates are suffering, but not as much as everyone else. Mm-hmm. That is an investment that has a fabulous long-term economic payoff for most people. Not everyone, but most people. It is a long-term investment that has a much higher payoff than housing. And so if there were someone deciding between should I own or should I go to college or graduate school, usually the economically rational thing to do would be to invest in something like education. And yet there's this conventional wisdom that owning is always the right thing to do.
Mm. Artie?
Could I make the point, 2 points real fast? One is we already made the investment. Now we're living on the investment. We're not invested again. Secondly, for younger people, I would suggest to own. I would strongly suggest, but make sure you buy something big enough for your future. Don't make the mistake of buying something too small that you then have to sell quickly and keep going through this process of never paying it off. Mm. That's, I think, the key thing. Don't buy too small, especially now you can really afford something that's really large enough for your family that you're planning or that you expect to have.
Artie,
and then it's good.
Thank you so much. And David Leonhardt, I'm going to guess that you agree with that. I see on your calculator here it says buying is better than renting after 5 years.
That's right. I mean, it certainly depends on what you assume is going to happen to prices, right? You have to play with that assumption on our calculator, because if prices increase 10% a year for the next 5 years, which I assume you don't think will happen and I don't think will happen, then owning might be better off. But that's absolutely right. I mean, what I try to emphasize is that stage of life should be your first consideration in rent versus buy, not exactly where you think the market is. Because just as Artie was saying, it's a huge mistake to buy and then buy another place 3 years later and another place 3 years later, in large part because of these enormous costs, starting with realtor fees. You never get that back.
We're just about out of time. What else? I think we've heard some of the main things from, you know, from people who are choosing to rent, as I was saying before about the caller who who wants to have the flexibility to move more easily, or those who are in graduate school making that education investment. Any, you know, just top line principles to add here before we run out of time?
I think the stage of life is the most important principle. A couple things I'll add are the regional variations are interesting. Washington, D.C. is the one metro area where prices are up over the last year. The places with the biggest declines are this interesting mix of the West Coast, Seattle and Portland, formerly bubbly areas, Tampa and Phoenix, and then the Midwest, which I will confess I don't entirely understand. Two of the three biggest drops over the last year are Chicago and Minneapolis. It may just be that the bust is coming to those places a little bit later.
I guess. And yet the bargains are out there.
That's certainly true. I mean, if you know or you think that you're ready to settle in for 10 or 15 years, there are now a lot of places where it makes sense to buy. I don't really think New York is one of them for most people, but there certainly are places around the country where it makes sense to buy.
David Leonhardt, New York Times economics columnist, on the new housing numbers out today and the personal rent or buy calculator that he did in the Times. You can get to the link to that from our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. David, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, thanks a lot with your calls on why you are renters by choice today. Coming up next, a whistleblower's guide to exposing your employer. Remember Jeffrey Wigand, who once blew the whistle as a tobacco company employee? He will be here along with the author of a book on a whistleblower's guide, that is a whistleblower's guide to exposing your employer. And then we'll get to that segment on whether college tuition is in a bubble right now. Stay with us.